la seguridad arriba. ¡Arriba!
Tenemos un herido. Aguas.
Aguas.
Dale, pasa. Lánzala. ¡Chaparro! Date vuelta, chaparro.
No puedo.
Tranquilo, chaparro. Tranquilo.
¡Ey!
¡Ey, mi
vecino!
Tranquilo, chaparro, tranquilo.
¡Dos más! ¡Dale! ¡Entra!
Tranquilo,
chaparro, tranquilo.
¡Dale!
¡Entra, sale el pay! ¡Listo! ¡Dale! ¡Granada! ¡Sobre esa puerta! ¡Esa puerta! ¡Hey! ¡Entren en esa! ¡Apóyalo acá! ¡Entrale! ¡Entrale! ¡Observa! ¡Si no ves nada, no dispares! ¡Bien! ¡Vamos! ¡Arriba! 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 ¡Suban! ¡Suban! ¡Un buen pay! ¿Qué hay ahí? Esa va hacia afuera.
¡Aguántelo!
¡Vamos arriba! ¡Vamos arriba! ¡Dos aquí! ¡Apóyale ya!
What you just heard there were sound bites from the raid on Joaquin El Chapo Guzman in Mexico by the Mexican military. If you haven't checked it out, you should. It is intense. CD79, my name is JDR, live on your iTunes, your Android, and your iOS on Podomatic.com. David Robinson at blogspot.com. Tawaquan at your-poetry.com. Yeah, El Chapo. You know they're gonna keep that man under lock and key, chained up in a damn straitjacket. He is not escaping this time because he embarrassed the hell out of him. Anyway, all I gotta say is sit back, relax, and enjoy.
to be here.
And the reason you're here is because Charlie Rose is in California, where he interviewed Sean Penn. The actor is breaking his silence about his secret trip to Mexico to meet the notorious drug lord Joaquin Guzman. Mexico recaptured the cartel leader known as El Chapo 1 week ago.
And Sean Penn made headlines the very next day when Rolling Stone published his account of visiting the kingpin in hiding last October. In an interview for Sunday 60 Minutes, Charlie met with Penn last night in Santa Monica to talk about that trip. Charlie joins us now from Santa Monica, where a lot of people, Charlie, are looking forward to hearing what Sean Penn has to say. Good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Gail and Nora and Anthony. It's been an interesting trip here. Sean Penn wanted to clarify his involvement in El Chapo's recapture. Mexican authorities have said knowledge of his trip helped them move in on the drug lord. Penn believes those claims of his contribution are incorrect and could put him in danger.
There is this myth about the visit that we made, my colleagues and I, with El Chapo, that it led, that it was, as the Attorney General in Mexico has quoted, essential to his capture. We had met with him many weeks earlier.
On October 2nd.
On October 2nd. In a place nowhere near where he was captured.
So as far as you know, you had nothing to do, and your visit had nothing to do with his recapture?
Here's the things that we know. We know that the Mexican government, they were clearly very humiliated by the notion that someone found him before they did. Well, nobody found him before they did. We're not smarter than the DEA or the Mexican intelligence. We had a contact upon which we were able to facilitate an invitation.
Do you believe that the Mexican government released this in part because they wanted to see you blamed and to put you at risk?
Yes.
They wanted to encourage the cartel to put you in their crosshairs?
Yes.
Are you fearful for your life?
No.
I first wanted to know why you wanted to do this, why you wanted to go there. I secondly want to know the sense of how you felt about the risk you might be taking and why that risk was worth it.
I had only that I thought this is somebody upon whose interview could I begin a conversation about the policy of the war on drugs. That was my simple idea.
You wanted to have a conversation about the policy of a war on drugs.
That's right. We're going to put all our focus, forget about blame, we're going to put all our focus, all our energy, all our billions of dollars on the bad guy. And what happens? You get another death the next day, the same one.
Do you make a moral equivalency between El Chapo and people who either buy or sell drugs in America?
I do if it's me. I don't make that judgment for everyone else, but I wouldn't go so far as to buy or sell drugs.
So he's no better than you and no worse than you.
I say I can't make him worse than me if I'm not out there doing everything that I can to get a conversation going on the way in which we prosecute that war.
You have said to the AP, and I'm asking now, you have no regrets.
Yeah, I have a terrible regret.
What are the regrets?
I have a regret that the entire discussion about this article ignores its purpose, which was to try to contribute to this discussion about the policy in the war on drugs. Let's go to the big picture of what we all want. We all want this drug problem to stop. We all want the killings in Chicago to stop. We are the consumer. Whether you agree with Sean Penn or not, there is a complicity there. And if you are in the moral right or on the far left, just as many of your children are doing these drugs. Just as many. And how much time have they spent in the last week since this article came out talking about that? 1%?
You're saying there's not much dialogue about...
My article failed. Let me be clear. My article has failed.
Charlie, is Sean Penn still in contact with anybody in El Chapo's camp? And does he think that the two will ever meet again?
No, he said he would have wanted to have met with him again, and that was his plan. But no, he has not heard from anyone in the cartel or surrounding El Chapo, who has now been recaptured back in the same prison that he escaped from a year ago, 6 months ago. So that point about him and what he hoped to accomplish is just one small part of a long conversation about how he negotiated with El Chapo, what the deal was. This deal and this trip was led by the actress Kate Del Castillo. She had some contact with him. He was smitten with her. And Sean contacted her and believes that, you know, that contact enabled him to go. We know now from some things that have been released from by the Mexican authorities, you know, that there was a very interesting dynamic between the two of them, enabled him to go. So watch 60 Minutes, and you'll see more of a very interesting conversation about the deals he made, why he went, and what he thought of El Chapo.
Mm-hmm. All right. In addition to 60 Minutes, how about watching you in our next hour, because you're coming back.
Well, and one more thing. He'll be in full. The conversation will be seen on my PBS show on Monday night.
All right. But again, Charlie's going to be here in our next hour. You can't leave us yet, Charlie. Sean Penn answers critics of the decision to allow. It's very interesting to hear anything Sean has to say about this. The decision for El Chapo to pre-approve the Rolling Stone article. And as Charlie mentioned, you can see his entire interview on 60 Minutes. That's Sunday right here on CBS.
Hey folks, it's JDR. You're listening to CD79 on your iTunes, your Android, your iOS on Podomatic.com. And you have David Robinson at blogspot.com and tawaquan.yo-poetry.com. And ladies and gentlemen, do not forget the YouTube channel. Now, you might be asking, well, why should I not forget it? You don't put anything on it. That's true. I haven't been putting very much on it. I've been kind of swamped, and I really haven't had anything that was so pertinent that I needed to communicate with you through YouTube. Most of the things I just say, I've just put it on the podcast. There's been really nothing that drastically important. But I'll try to move in another direction. We'll see what's going on, you know. Anyway, I hope your 2016 has started off well. I know most of us, or for most of us, it probably hasn't, because we didn't win the $1.3 billion Powerball jackpot. Yeah, me personally, I'm not surprised, because I don't win anything. But I tell you what, there were a group of women, Facebook friends, that bought 6,000 tickets, and they didn't win anything. So that kind of makes me feel better, because they were saying, well, no one person should win that amount of money. Yeah, well, you know what? Just about one person won that amount of money. It was a family of people, actually, so it wasn't just one person. But, you know, who are you to, you know, make these decisions? Other than that, I had my doctor's appointment today, and, you know, I got the bad knees. But other than that, she said everything is fine. My liver is a bit fatty, which is, you know, of course it's a bit fatty, you know. I'm, you know, drinking a lot. But anyway, you know, I'm doing well. And I hope you all are doing well. So let's get back to the show, and I might be back later. Okay.
A Philadelphia police officer was ambushed yesterday by a gunman while sitting in his marked car. And here are the facts. Police Commissioner Richard Ross said the suspect fired 13 shots to hit Officer Jesse Hartnett in his car late Thursday. He said the officer returned fire, hitting his assailant at least three times. Officer Christine O'Brien said the man was struck at least once in the buttock, talking about the gunman there who was apprehended shortly thereafter. Richard Ross, the police commissioner, went on to say that this is absolutely one of the scariest things I've ever seen. And I believe we have some of the surveillance shots of the man. Now, we also know now a little bit. Yeah, you're seeing there he walks up to the car, which is just sitting there, fires 13 shots. Miraculously, only three connect, and only with the officer's arm. Now, he dialed in for backup and support, which was dispatched almost immediately, and he is now expected to fully recover.
And that's the important thing, ladies and gentlemen. Now, what I find so interesting about what you heard there, you know, I don't know if you saw the there's the video of it. The guy walks up to the car. He shoots 14 times. He hits the officer three times just in the shoulder. I mean, really. But here's my point. People are always trying to make a case. For example, if a cop shoots a person and kills him, you will hear a person say, you will hear people often say, well, should have shot him in the leg or shot him in the arm. You can't do that. Number one, have you ever shot a gun? Have you ever fired a gun? Guns have recoil. You will shoot that gun and it'll throw your arm back, depending on what kind of gun it is. Any gun is going to throw your arm back, but some guns, like a 9mm, throw your arm back, you might even break your shoulder. I mean, it's happened, you know, and it is not an easy thing to point and shoot. People think you just point and shoot. It's not like that. That's why police are taught to shoot for the mass area, which is basically the chest down to the waist. That's what they're taught. If you go to a shooting range, you don't see you don't see one of those targets with arms and legs on it. You see a head, shoulder, chest, down to the waist. Because you're taught to shoot center mass. You're not taught to be wired up. It's not easy to handle a gun. I know. I was in the military. I used to shoot an M16, and that thing would jerk my shoulder back every time I shot it. I was waiting for it to dislocate my shoulder. So that's my point here. People have to realize when they're always getting upset about kids getting killed and stuff like this. Well, first things first, usually these kids are in a bad situation and doing something really stupid. You know, or as we have had often, you've got a really dumb or hateful cop out there, which is sad. But unfortunately, you know, people are people. We are dealing with the human element. Okay? But I find that this particular case is interesting because this guy had his hand, he leaned inside the car and shot 14 times, only hitting the officer in the shoulder 3 times. It goes to show you, it's not easy. You see these kids, you know, they point the guns, you know, they do the sideways thing like there's some sort of gangster. Let me tell you something. When you shoot that gun and that recoil hits, that is not a joke. That is not a joke. And a lot of kids out there getting killed by guns, we know that. That's because these guys are walking up and they are just shooting. Bam, 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 bam. One or two of those bullets are going to hit and they might luck out. You know, and unfortunately, more often than not, they luck out. But they're often emptying a clip when they do that. That's just the way it is. You know, guns are dangerous. I love weapons, but you know, I'm not stupid. Okay. Anyway, you're listening to CD 79. My name is JDR. Let's get back to it, shall we?
What is the answer, Senator Cruz, to stop mass shootings and violent crime up in 30 cities across the country?
The answer is simple. You prosecute criminals. You target the bad guys. You know, a minute ago, Neil asked, what has President Obama done to illustrate that he wants to go after guns? Well, he appointed Eric Holder as Attorney General. Eric Holder said he viewed his mission as brainwashing the American people against guns. He appointed Sonia Sotomayor to the Supreme Court, someone who has been a radical against the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. He launched Fast and Furious, illegally selling guns to Mexican drug lords that were then used to shoot law enforcement officials. And I'll tell you what Hillary Clinton has said. Hillary Clinton says she agrees with the dissenters, the Supreme Court dissenters in the Heller case. There were 4 dissenters, and they said that they believe the Second Amendment protects no individual right to keep and bear arms whatsoever, which means if their view prevailed and the next president's going to get 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 Supreme Court justices, the court will rule that not a single person in this room has any right under the Second Amendment and the government could confiscate your guns. And I'll note that California's Senator, Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein said, if she could say to Mr. America and Mrs. America, give me your guns, I'm rounding them up, she would. And let me make a final point on this. Listen, in any Republican primary, everyone is going to say they support the Second Amendment. Unless you are clinically insane, that's what you say in a primary. But the voters are savvier than that. They recognize that people's actions don't always match their words. I've got a proven record fighting to defend the Second Amendment. There's a reason Gun Owners of America has endorsed me in this race. There's a reason the NRA gave me their Carter Knight Freedom Fund Award. And there's a reason when Barack Obama and Chuck Schumer came after our right to keep and bear arms that I led the opposition along with millions of Americans. We defeated that gun control legislation. And I would note the other individuals on this stage were nowhere to be found in that fight.
Senator, let me follow up and switch gears. Senator Cruz, you suggested Mr. Trump, quote, embodies New York values. Could you explain what you mean by that?
You know, I think most people know exactly what New York values are.
I am from New York.
Well, you're from New York, so yeah. You might not. But I promise you, in the state of South Carolina, they do. And listen, there are many, many wonderful, wonderful working men and women in the state of New York. But everyone understands that the values in New York City are socially liberal or pro-abortion or pro-gay marriage, focus around money and the media. And I would note, indeed, the reason I said that is I was asked, my friend Donald has taken to at his events playing Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA. And I was asked what I thought of that, and I said, well, if he wanted to play a song, maybe he could play New York, New York. And you know, the concept of New York values is not that complicated to figure out. Not too many years ago, Donald did a long interview with Tim Russert. And in that interview, he explained his views on a whole host of issues that were very, very different from the views he's describing now. And his explanation, he said, look, I'm from New York. That's what we believe in New York. Those aren't Iowa values, but this is what we believe in New York. And so that was his explanation. And I guess I can frame it another way. Not a lot of conservatives come out of Manhattan. I'm just saying.
Are you sure about that?
Maria. So conservatives actually do come out of Manhattan, including William F. Buckley and others, just so you understand. And just so if I could, because he insulted a lot of people, I've had more calls on that statement that Ted made. New York is a great place. It's got great people. It's got loving people, wonderful people. When the World Trade Center came down, I saw something that no place on earth could have handled more beautifully, more humanely than New York. You had two 100... You had two 110-story buildings come crashing down. I saw them come down. Thousands of people killed. And the cleanup started the next day, and it was the most horrific cleanup probably in the history of doing this and in construction. I was down there. And I've never seen anything like it. And the people in New York fought and fought and fought. And we saw more death and even the smell of death. Nobody understood it. And it was with us for months, the smell, the air. And we rebuilt downtown Manhattan. And everybody in the world watched, and everybody in the world loved New York and loved New Yorkers. And I have to tell you, that was a very insulting statement that Ted made.
Hells yeah, it was. Let me tell you, I haven't been agreeing a lot with Donald Trump's campaign at the moment, but the way he defended New York was really good. Because Ted Cruz is a moron. How do you just come off saying some dumb shit like that? You know what I mean? He sits home, you know, in South Carolina and watches New York from the television. That's the only thing he knows about New York. And then he had the nerve to send New Yorkers emails and ask for money. That's right. He asked New Yorkers for money. He asked them to pony up for his campaign. He's got a lot of damn nerve. Well, anyway, you're listening to CD79 live in your iTunes, your Android, and your iOS. Podomatic.com, David Robinson at Blogspot.com, Tawakwan at your-poetry.com, and once again, the Complaint Department YouTube channel. You know, you can go back and look at some of the old stuff, and, you know, I'll be putting some stuff in there. I think that everything that's on the YouTube channel right now has some sort of pertinence to it, I think. I think it's kind of interesting. So let me give my shout-outs to the NYPD. The FDNY, my brothers and sisters in the military, all first responders, the ASPCA, Bravo, North Shore Animal League, SOS Wildlife, and Defenders of the Voiceless. I might be back, then again, I might not. Yeah.
After a lengthy investigation in North Bergen, 50 animals were rescued from a home on Hillside Place. Unfortunately, one canine was found dead.
The North Bergen Police Department, New Jersey Animal Control and Rescue, Bergen County Protect and Rescue, and Mount Pleasant Animal Shelter all collaborated on an animal cruelty case at 132 Hillcrest Place, where neighbors had been complaining for months about dog hoarding. Juan Perez, 58, the tenant of the residence, wasn't home and neighbors said they haven't seen him in days. The investigation hit a crescendo when Perez was a no-show in North Bergen Municipal Court this morning for summonses issued by the health department. BCPR volunteers first brought out 17 puppies, both Rottweilers and Labradors, before incredibly finding 33 fully grown dogs. The majority of the canines were in good health, though a few appeared dehydrated and or malnourished and suffered from cherry eyes, a condition officials said could easily be corrected. At least three kittens were removed from the home as well. One glance at the living room revealed that the home is in, at best, deplorable condition. Jeff Santini, who operates NJACR and is also North Bergen's animal cruelty investigator, said that Perez could face fines upwards of $50,000 and possibly even 2 years in jail for hoarding so many animals.
And West Hill, I made the statement that was the worst case of animal hoarding. With cats, this is my worst case with dogs. There was no furniture, there's feces in here and everywhere. The smell is unbelievable. We have to take breathing breaks. It's very deplorable.
And now, I guess the biggest challenge, I would think, on the enforcement side, law enforcement side, is that how do you find the guy now? I mean, he seems to have just disappeared, right?
That's one good thing I'm doing good at. I can find people. As soon as the charges are filed, first and foremost, the animals, we're going to get them fully vetted, checked out at the shelter, washed and cleaned, and see what animals we can put up for adoption. Hope everybody supports that. And then the cruelty side, I have 1 year to press the charges, but within a week, all the charges will be filed against him. And he's looking at, with all these animals counted, probably 50 to 55 animal counts of animal cruelty.
And as we were speaking about before, that's probably about $50,000 in fines and could be 6 months to 2 years in jail?
That's correct.
And then the other thing is just, when you have these animal cruelty issues that you and I have both encountered in the past month, I mean, what is there that, you know, animal control, the health department, neighbors can do to help curb this kind of thing in North Hudson?
Please report it. As this was reported, once one complaint comes to the door, it doesn't fall wayside. We act on every animal cruelty. Any animal complaint, and then if the animal complaint turns to animal cruelty, I'll be there to investigate it.
A woman who would only identify herself as Anna, the property owner of 132 Hillcrest Place, had little to say about the situation, but did state she was unaware of any issues with the home.
And it looks like a hoarding situation. Are you familiar with the tenant? I mean, have you guys been checking up on this property? I mean, is this is all new to you?
Yes, I checked the property, but oh, I don't know. They have so many dogs. So, I have nothing to say.
Are you regularly in communication with this tenant?
Oh, yes. They pay the rent and everything. It's okay. The only thing is not okay. They had 20 dogs.
Those looking to adopt the puppies, dogs, or kittens could contact the North Bergen Health Department at 201-392-2084.
I'm John Hytus at the Hudson County View, the eye of the community.
But no, in my group of friends, the sluttiest of us was this girl, Katie. And we didn't judge her for that, but she wouldn't own it. Like, as soon as she would have a boyfriend, she'd start acting like Mother Teresa. You know, she'd like walk different. She'd talk differently. Like, I remember one time she walked over with her new boyfriend. She was like, Adam and I are thrilled you could join us for brunch. I was like, I've helped you get come out of your hair. Remember, we tried using peanut butter because we're stupid. Remember? So she moved to Connecticut and like was getting married, and she had a wedding shower there, and I was the only friend from home that could go. So I met all of her new fancy Connecticut friends, and like, you know, women like this, like these girls, they were all like very Stepford wife, you know, they all like wore like pastel cashmere cardigans and pearls and Burberry like tampons. And they all spoke like this, like almost in a whisper, like they all were, everybody just walked around whispering to each other. Like, oh, I guess we were just born with different vocal cords. Because I was raised better. Do you ski? So I'm at this party, and I'm like mainlining Chardonnay, trying to remember fun. just like, why? So one of the girls was like, let's play a game. And I'm like, suicide pact? I'll go first. This party's the worst. And she goes, no, let's all go around and admit something. And I'm like, oh no. So these girls are going around. They're admitting is so boring. I can't. Like, one girl was like, once I forgot to let the dog out all day. And they were all like, no! I'm like, is this happening right now? So the girl who goes right before me, Bridget, the worst human I've ever met. I hope she sees this. That's how bad of a person she is. Like, Bridget, I hope you're watching this. But she wouldn't. She wouldn't be up this late. She spoke the softest. You had to, like, lean in and squint and read her lips. Because she just... Bridget talked like an angel was sleeping on her tongue. So anyway, she's like, all right, you guys, it's my turn. Bring it in. And we're like, we're in, because we have to be. Because you talk like Feifel. Use your diaphragm, Bridge. So she's like, I'll admit this. Sometimes... after Richard falls asleep, I get up and eat ice cream. I just wanted to find one other pair of eyes being like, what a dumb c***, right? But nothing. No one. They're all looking at her like, Bridget, you should be asleep. Bridget, it's night. Carbs? Come on. So then it's my turn, and... I don't look at my friend, Katie. I just feel her just glaring at me, just like, don't be yourself right now, bitch. This is my new life. And so I'm like, okay, first of all, Bridget, thank you for being so brave. I'll admit this. It's kind of like your ice cream thing. One time, I let a cab driver finger me. And Katie's like, that's not how you play, Amy. I'm like, really? Because I feel like I won. You guys, you were an amazing...
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. My name is JDR. I'm here with my friend Tawa Gron. And we want you to get your ass on together and hang out with us and get right. Ain't that stupid? Come on, get me. That's right. This is for you, people. About time for you people to get on it. Shake your stuff like you ain't never had enough. Too groovy for me. Listening to my man Tawar Kwan and rocking out with us and just getting right. I'm about to go backstage and get right. Oh yeah. See you at the next CD.
For all of us at the ASPCA, working to save the lives of animals is on our minds every day. And in the past year, I've been inspired by the outpouring of support we've received from members like you. Thousands of animals have been saved from deplorable conditions by our emergency responders, and thousands more were given life-saving medical treatment, and still even more were impacted by the passage of humane animal welfare laws in states across the country. Laws that you helped us fight for. Whether rescuing innocent dogs from the horrors of dogfighting, responding to natural disasters, or putting an end to the cruel and inhumane practices on factory farms, our commitment to giving a voice to the voiceless is renewed every day. But our work depends on the dedicated support of people like you. Every day, I am thankful for those who take time out to volunteer, to share our stories, and to donate. Thank you for making this another year of progress for animals and for saving lives with us every day.